We are going to move to the final item for today, and that is number 19, Southeast South Dakota Fisheries Management.
Okay. Someone else is sharing. Is there... what do I need to do to... I see it says someone else is sharing. Ah, there we go.
Yep, okay. Should be good now, Dave.
Great. Let's do this one. Can you all see my screen?
Yes, we can.
And hear me?
Yes,
okay.
We can.
Great. Well, I see I landed at the coveted 10 minutes to happy hour slot. So anyways, good afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioners, and Secretary Roebling. I'd like to talk to you today about managing... about managing fisheries in marginal lakes in southeastern South Dakota. Let me see if I can. This will just go this route. Okay. Marginal waters are waters that are typically shallow. They're highly productive, loaded with phosphorus, referred to as hypereutrophic, and that's in part due to the fact that our prairie soils are rich, and in the southeast, the land is intensively farmed, and so you do get a lot of supercharged runoff into these lakes. And when you put these two things together, it makes these lakes prone to both summer and winter kill of fish. So our resource in the southeast, our aquatic resource, is comprised of natural lakes. We have 44 natural lakes that are total up about 46,000 acres. We have 16 impoundments that total about 3,200 acres. And we are up to 36 community fishing ponds now, totaling 320 acres. So of the 96 waters we manage, about 50,000 acres, roughly half of these lakes and about 35% of the acres managed are classified as marginal. So what I'd like to talk to you next is about about the different types of fish kills. And some of these are common and you're probably aware of them, and others are a little less common and it might be informative to, you know, understand that there are different types. So the first of these is the classic winter kill, the one we're all familiar with. And this kill occurs when we have a severe winter. There's thick ice, a lot of snow on that ice, and the winter is long. And what happens is you've got all that snow on the ice, so there's poor light penetration. And as we know, plants need light to photosynthesize and produce oxygen. And so when you're not getting enough light, you don't get photosynthesis, you don't get oxygen production. And what you have is depletion of the dissolved oxygen, because we know even though cold-blooded animals don't metabolize very quickly in cold water, they still consume oxygen. And we also have decaying plants, which also consume oxygen. And so we get depletion of the oxygen to a point where fish eventually suffocate and die. You know, one question we always get is, why are there always so many dead carp and buffalo visible? Well, when fish die, they start to decompose. You get gas buildup in the body cavity. These big-bodied fish end up floating to the surface and end up on the shoreline, whereas some of the smaller fish we think just sink to the bottom or are readily consumed by terns, gulls, as soon as the ice goes out. So that's why you're often seeing carp and buffalo along the shorelines. you know, what are the factors that influence fish kill? In this case, specifically winter kill. And the first of these is if we have a drought and low water going into winter, of course, we've got a smaller volume of water in that lake, and that makes the lake much more susceptible to winter kill, especially during a severe winter. If you have a high abundance of fish, that's just that many more animals breathing down there, consuming the oxygen, or a high abundance of aquatic vegetation that is decomposing in the wintertime, you're going to consume more oxygen, and it's going to be a higher probability of a kill. And then there are just factors that we just don't understand. You know, we have Lake A and Lake B. They look very similar. You know, they have similar conditions. And one lake kills, and the other lake is perfectly fine. And so there's a lot of things we don't understand. Years ago, we used to monitor oxygen in the winter. We'd cut a hole in the ice and use a DO meter and measure oxygen, in part because we used to liberalize these lakes when the oxygen was really low and we thought they were going to kill, which we discontinued that because when the oxygen is low, fish typically don't bite very well, and it was almost too late. But what we found is we can measure crazy low DO. Sometimes even the water stinks. You know, you've got that hydrogen sulfide buildup. And yet when the ice goes out in the spring, those fish are fine. And in another lake that we wouldn't have even anticipated a kill, the fish are dead. So we pretty much stopped doing that. However, in that harsh winter of 22-23, we knew we were going to have quite a bit. We wanted to inform the public, and so we did do some monitoring. So that's your classic kill. However, the last couple of years, we've had another unique type of kill, and in fact, we might have one going on Lake Carthage right now. It's called gas bubble disease. And what happens is you get too much gas in the water, And those fish get, you know, they take in too many gases, and you get a buildup of gas inside their body. You can see on this sheep's head here, gas bubbles around the eyes and you know, along the fins there, and that will kill the fish. And this happens during a mild winter. You've got thin ice, clear ice, a lot of light penetration, that algae that's in the water is photosynthesizing. And of course those gases are trapped under the ice. And then when the ice starts to go out, that ice will release a lot of oxygen. And so you get a super saturation of gases. And so you get too much dissolved gas, and that kills fish. This happened on Lake Traverse in the winter of 23-24, and on Lake Campbell in the winter of 21-22, and the winter of 23-24. Spring kills, you know, winter is stressful for some species of fish, especially warm water fishes like crappies. And I remember one spring, people were calling us on McCook Lake and saying, there's crappies just sitting under my dock. I can almost grab them with my hands. And I think what happens is that long, hard winter is stressful, and these fish are just almost comatose, and some of them eventually die. Spawning, when fish lay their eggs and reproduce, that is stressful. You see carp up in the shallows wallowing around, walleyes, you know, along the rocks, yellow perch. You see those jumbo yellow perch. They lose probably almost a quarter or more of their body weight in just eggs. And so often we will see fish die right after the spawning period. And then disease. Carp have a retrovirus. I was just talking to a biologist up in North Dakota who was talking about a huge white bass kill on Devil's Lake. So disease takes its fair share of fish. We've got the classic summer kill. You know, these marginal waters, they're the ones where you see that blue-green algal bloom. We get the advisories, and, you know, you get a dense algal bloom. The wind pushes that algae to one shoreline. Then you get a calm, hot night, And what that algae does is after dark, instead of producing oxygen, it starts to consume it, respirate, and it crashes the DO overnight, and that kills fish. So that often happens in late summer because the nights are longer during this time, and there's more time for that DO to drop. One that you might not be familiar with, but that happens fairly frequently, and this isn't always in our marginal bodies of water. So it seems to happen a lot in our reservoirs that are deeper. And what you get is what's called a turnover kill. As you can see in this picture, you've got a warm upper layer called the epilimnion as the summer warms the water. And then you've got a transitional layer called the thermocline, and then that cooler bottom layer called the hypolimnion. And these layers don't mix because the waters are different densities. Until, in typically in August or early September, you get a good cold front or a cold snap coming through or a heavy rain, and that cools that top layer to a point where it mixes with that bottom layer. And the bottom layer doesn't have any oxygen in it usually. It's been depleted over the summer. And so that mixing will plunge the DO and kill fish. And we've seen some pretty good ones like on Merindol Lake, Lake Alvin, over the last couple years with that hot, dry summer. Actually, the lake will often re-stratify then fairly quickly, and then you get true turnover that you see in all the Minnesota lakes in the fall. In the Southeast Fish Management Area, over the last 4 years, nearly half of our waters have witnessed or have experienced a fish kill. So it's something that we deal with regularly. You know, and with winter kill and other fish kills, there's good and there's bad. You know, some of these lakes often build up huge densities of black bullheads or common carp or white sucker or buffalo, and you kill off those densities of fish and you sort of have a clean slate to work with, and often your stocked fish do really well because you're stocking them into a void. There's no competition, there's not a lot of predation, so yeah. So that's good. The bad is that we lose some really good fisheries. You know, I think of the oak woods in the before 2019. We kill off some really good fisheries, and sometimes the restocking doesn't work as well as we would like it to. But we do have to manage it. So stocking fish is our primary method of rebuilding these fisheries. In a marginal lake where there's been a severe winter kill, we often try to stock pre-spawn yellow perch and northern pike, and it's not those adults that we stock that will create the fishery, but it's their offspring that do. And you know, and those offspring often do pretty well because there's not a lot of competition and there's not a lot of fish to eat them. The other thing we do, our hatcheries produce abundant walleye and sockeye fry, and we often do two consecutive years of stocking, and that works really well. Those fish grow well. In our impoundments and community fish ponds, we'll often stock adult panfish and bass and channel catfish that do really well. And also in the impoundments, we started stocking sockeye after these kills, and they seem to do pretty well too in those impoundments. Monitoring of these systems, we typically only survey these systems every 2 to 3 years. We want to see if our stockings have done well, have taken. We want to see what's produced. We want to see, you know, what's happened with the non-game fish. Have they rebounded? However, we really don't measure fish growth. We don't do those aging of scales and stuff like that because these fisheries are dynamic. We could lose them in a couple years, and growth is traditionally good. You know, Todd St. Sauver, he was my supervisor. He was the former area fish supervisor, my supervisor for many years. And he always said yellow perch are a crop to be harvested. You know, they aren't long-lived, and this holds true for crappies, too. These panfish aren't long-lived. They're going to die by age 4, 5, or 6, whether you catch them or not. And if you put winter kill or fish kill on top of it, you realize that maybe protecting fish for the next year or the future might not always be the best strategy, because Mother Nature might take them all from you. So sometimes harvesting fish is the best way to go. Take them while you can get them. So in summary, these marginal waters provide us with a unique management challenge opportunity. Fish kills definitely make for a fresh start, and sometimes a better fishery as we get rid of some of those overabundant species. You know, I think when you manage these marginal waters and 50% of our waters experience kills, that sheds some light on the importance of harvesting fish. You know, I think sometimes taking fish when they're available is a really good strategy. So with that, I didn't go over too long. I will take any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Dave. Any questions? Dave, I do have one, and if you said this and I missed it, I apologize. When we do have a fish kill, what is our policy at the department? Do we do any cleanup? Do we just let them go back into the earth? What's our policy?
We do not. You know, often these fish will wash to shore, and we are not responsible for that cleanup. Typically, it is the landowners, the shoreline residents that are responsible for the cleanup. However, after that big kill year of 22-23, we did dig pits on public property, providing an area where they could dispose of those dead fish.
Very good. Thank you for that answer. Additional questions? Comments? Very good report. Interesting. We appreciate you bringing it to us today.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And with that, it is 8 minutes past 5 p.m. Central Time. We are going to be done for today. We'll come back tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Mountain. We'll see everybody tomorrow morning.